go to corporatecrimereporter.com.
For a copy of the day the rats vetoed Congress, go to ratsreformcongress.org, and also check out the Ralph Nader and Family Cookbook, Classic Recipes from Lebanon and Beyond. We will link to both of those on ralphnaderradiohour.com.
Remember to join us on Sunday, October 17th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, for our virtual Congress Club meeting. Ralph wants you to join the... It should go like this. Ralph wants you to join the Congress Club. We want to hear your stories and share strategies to keep holding Congress accountable. And we'll be holding our very first virtual Congress Club Town Hall on Sunday, October 17th at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific.
So if you're a Congress Club member, look out for that invitation from us. And if you're not a member, become a member. Go to Ralph Nader Radio Hour website, and in the top right margin, click on the button labeled Congress Club to get more information.
The producers of the Ralph Nader Radio Hour are Jimmy Lee Wirt and Matthew Marin. Our executive producer is Alan Minsky.
Our theme music, Stand Up, Rise Up, was written and performed by Kemp Harris. Our proofreader is Elizabeth Solomon. Our associate producer is Hannah Feldman. Our social media manager, Stephen Wendt.
Join us next week on the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you, listeners. Try to get one of the many radio stations in your area to carry the show.
Good morning. You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York. The Ralph Nader Hour with Ralph Nader came to you on recording over a listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up is Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund at 7 o'clock. Please stay tuned.
I believe that we have got to mobilize a larger movement to reclaim the democracy.
Radio broadcaster Bob Law.
Some of y'all have underestimated the value and the appeal of white supremacy. And you have no idea how strong white privilege and white supremacy is.
Tune in to From the Streets with Bob Law, which gives voice to a wide range of black and progressive political and cultural perspectives. That's 11 to noon Saturdays here over listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
Thanks to you.
Thank you.
Thank each and every one of you for coming by.
And while he's thanking those folks, let me take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners and support staff, our contributors, our interns, the volunteers, producers, and the entire crew that works countless hours to bring WBAI into your lives.
Thank you.
This is Phil Donahue. And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This week, a brief discourse on Stanislaw Lem and a classic radio drama based on Isaac Asimov. But first, a word from Dan Persons. Stay tuned.
Persons, and this is my Hour of the Wolf review. I'm going to focus in on a tiny little detail from the Addams Family 2, the new animated version of the franchise that's now in theaters and may be available for streaming for an premium price. Nothing premium about this. And I'm hoping I'll be able to make a larger point from it. In the film, Pugsley, Morticia and Gomez Addams' young son, who for some reason is dumber in this iteration than any other, is trying to meet girls. It's one of the half-dozen or so inadequately fleshed-out subplots in the film, like Uncle Fester turning into a squid, Grandmama throwing a house party, and Gomez trying to connect with his goth daughter, Wednesday. We see two of Pugsley's attempts, and in both cases, the girls he's approaching are selfie-taking, brats with a Z-type moppets, complete with the whatever voice cadence that serves as shorthand for shallowness. They may even be the same animation models in both cases, and the same voice actresses. And maybe that's a joke, but you can't shake the sense that the creative team was just taking the path of least resistance here. That also applies to the punchline for this so-called running gag, when Pugsley encounters a similarly piggy girl, and it's love at first sight. And yeah, there's a lot to be insulted about there, even before you find out that the girl is an actual pig. Plus, the film briefly implies that she may be Pugsley's sister, and I can't imagine that the writers, of which there are four, didn't at one point notice that, and in a further show of contempt, just shrug it off. The Addams Family, too, is a victim to the Shrekified pop culture referencing template that's plagued quote-unquote family-oriented CG animation for two decades now. It even ends with a dance party sequence. That's how out of time this whole exercise feels. The actual plot, by the way, for all that it matters, is that the family is taking a road trip. The motivation for this is as poorly established as everything else, but it could have been fun if any thought had been given to how the locations might inform the characters. Instead, it's just random. What do Niagara Falls, Miami, the Grand Canyon, and San Antonio have in common? The only thing I can think of is that they had tourist boards willing to pony up cash to be featured in the film. What's most frustrating is that the Addamses, the actual animated characters, and their world are beautifully designed, taking off from the original Charles Adams concepts, but with a sleeker retooling that's quite attractive. It might lean too heavily on Tim Burton, but it does work, so I can't complain there. There's a lot that could be done with these characters, and instead, they're plunked down into the same bland environs that are cranked out for every other CG animated film not from Pixar or DreamWorks. There are a few clever moments, as when Wednesday is forced to participate in a child beauty pageant, and there's an intimation that the butler Lurch might be gay, which may or may not have been intentional, but damn, wouldn't that have been interesting? I don't think anybody involved with the Addams Family 2 regarded it as anything other than just another animated franchise to crank out, get into the theaters, and rake in the bucks. It's just a missed opportunity all the way around. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
Thank you, Dan. The Polish writer Stanisław Lem, L-E-M, was 100 years old this week. He passed away a few years ago, but nonetheless, this is the celebration of his birthday. And he is a vastly underrated, brilliant writer of speculative fiction, having forged many ways modern writers still don't recognize and yet owe him for. Perhaps even more important, and this is not true of many science fiction writers, are the movies based on his works. And there are three that I am aware of, two derived from the same work, Solaris, S-O-L-A-R-I-S. And the first one was directed by the great Russian director, Andrei Tarkovsky. And it came out about 1972-73, and Tarkovsky was a hot director, hot in the sense of very emotional, very intent on getting his message across. And he saw Stanley Kubrick's 2001 Space Odyssey, and he both admired it for everything that it accomplished, which is basically bringing great science fiction, real science fiction, to the screen, and he abhorred it because it was so cold. It was so, well, Kubrick. And Kubrick is not known as a humanitarian when it comes to the stories within his films. And 2001 is no exception. It is perhaps as cold as space, but also as daunting and brilliant as the wonders of space. And so Tarkovsky thought, using Stanisław Lem's work, that he could do what, in a sense, was a call and response. 2001 was the call, and Solaris was the response. Solaris is basically an epic. It runs almost 3 hours, about a psychologist who is sent out to a satellite that surrounds a planet with, well, people just don't know with what. All they know is that it has, in essence, gone dark. The people there seem to be alive, but they don't want to communicate with Earth, and they don't. So the psychologist is sent with the concept, with the mission, I should say, of whether or not they would close the station down. After a long series of intercuts on Earth, including a very long, and again a very Kubrick-style sequence in which we see nothing but our protagonist being driven through tunnels and woods and beautiful areas of Russia. Tunnels are when we get to Moscow and he gets to the spaceport. And then, without much interest in what happens in space, unlike Kubrick, who pays so much attention to what happens with the hardware and with the people reacting to their science fictional surroundings, our protagonist finds himself in a very strange situation. People are alarmed to see him. They are in their rooms. They don't want to come out. And what becomes apparent is that for some reason they are getting visitations from some of the most important people in their lives. Unfortunately, these people are dead, but nevertheless live on. It's hard to discuss this without giving away key points of the plot that are best experienced by either A, reading the novel, or B, watching one of the two movies that have been made from this. But I'm going to give it a try. Suffice it to say that the planet that they are orbiting is basically just a huge ocean with one big difference. It is sentient. It has the ability to read the people and to react to the people. And as a result of that, it does things. In this case, it reanimates things that are people's deepest desires, greatest loves. Our protagonist discovers his wife, who has been dead these past 10 years, and finally cannot stand it any longer, and tries to do away with her. Not cruelly, but simply so that he can prevent himself from going mad. And that, it shares that with 2001, where it's actually Hal that goes mad, but I wouldn't say that Dave exactly totally keeps his head either. At any rate, the story progresses and we learn more about the interaction between the people and the sentient ocean and the people's loved ones who no longer can be with us. And it's quite an epic of a movie. Tarkovsky was a brilliant, brilliant director. He was hot in the sense as Kubrick was cold, where Kubrick was simply about the coldness of space and his great alien is a monolith. In Solaris, it is a living ocean. Very, very different kind of a thing. Now, this is not the way Lem intended to write it, but this is what Tarkovsky intended to make of it. As I said, call and response. The quality of Lem's writing was not fully realized in the U.S. for a long time, partly because of translations. However, in the last 20 years, there have been vast improvements. We've had Michael Kandel, K-A-N-D-E-L, pardon me, on the program, who has discussed the translating. He's not only a fine writer himself, but works with the Modern Language Association, or at least did at the time, and he explained a great deal of what went on with Lem's writing. But the more important versions of his writing have been brought to a better reading audience. So it stands to reason that more Americans, more people, would not only read Lem, but possibly also see the Tarkovsky film. And lo and behold, there was another version of Solaris. And I thought, oh no, not a remake. Even though the person making the film was Steven Soderbergh, and the movie starred George Clooney and Viola Davis, who are people who read their scripts and tend to know what it is that they are doing when it comes to choosing a script and choosing a story to tell. Isaac Asimov is a seminal science fiction writer. He was a bit controversial for his behavior in a few ways, but I knew Ike, and he was quite a character. A story that I often tell was not long after I got into WBAI and producing science fiction programs, I attended one of my first Science Fiction Writer of America meetings, and there was the Dr. Isaac Asimov. There was no way of not knowing him. He was a media figure and a cult figure. Forgive me if you've heard this story before. I've told it a few times, but I will attempt to not make it too terribly long. I made contact with Dr. Asimov. He called me the kid with the hair, because at that point I had this really bushy red curly hair. You wouldn't believe it to look at me now, but if you Google pictures of me, you will see it. And I asked him if he would come and do a show. It would have been my first, and was my first, live radio show. I call him up at home. How do I get his number? I asked him, "What's your number?" He said, "Look me up. I'm in the book." Very, very strong New York Jewish accent. So indeed, about a week later, I look in the Manhattan directory, and there is Isaac Asimov. So I give him a call, and that voice answers. There's no mistaking who it was. And I said, "Dr. Asimov?" He said, "Yes, Isaac, thank you." I said, "I didn't know," when I looked it up in the phone book, "that this would be you." And he said, I know, it's a problem. I tried to get them to list me as the Dr. Isaac Asimov, but they won't do it. Well, that was Ike all over. There are more stories I can tell about that very appearance. Suffice it to say that I also had on Frederick Pohl and Lester Del Rey, not only great writers, but people who were far more experienced in radio than I, because they were often co-hosts on the Long John Nebel Show. Isaac has fared very poorly when it comes to adaptations of his work. Not talking about radio, which we're going to hear an example of, but the movies. I, Robot with Will Smith has nothing to do with the ideas and adventures of Dr. Susan Calvin. I, Robot is a series of short stories that are seminal science fiction, and of course created the famed Three Laws of Robotics. And then the very short story that we're going to hear a radio adaptation of, Nightfall, was turned into a movie that is regarded by some people, and I don't mean just science fiction people, but critics, as one of the worst movies ever made. And it's a shame. It's a slight story in terms of what it does, but it's great science fiction in that it takes something that we all know about, but otherwise would not be obvious to the people experiencing the story. And a revelation comes that explains the entire thing. Here then, from Dimension X, the second production, there was an earlier one on X-1, Max Schmid can tell you all about it. Nightfall by Isaac Asimov.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, Nightfall by Isaac Asimov.
Ralph Waldo Emerson speculated, if the stars should appear one night in 1,000 years, how would man believe and adore and perceive for many generations the remembrance of the city of God? This was philosophically interesting. But on the edge of the galaxy, a planet swings on its orbit in a cluster of 6 suns. These suns hang in the sky above. Never less than 2 shine down through the entire 23.8 hours of the planet's day. The yellow light has burned down on the planet continuously, into the past, till the mind of man runneth not to the contrary. Theremin was a reporter for the Saro City Chronicle. He covered them all, from the night police beat to politics to the sports pages, and the city editor wanted him to cover the biggest story of the year, perhaps of all time. It was an interview, a particularly difficult interview. But then, since his first days as a cub, Theremin had specialized in difficult interviews. It cost him bruises, black eyes, and broken bones, but it had gotten him an ample supply of coolness and self-confidence. He didn't expect violence, though, from an astronomer.
You're from that newspaper? Well, you got a lot of gall coming here.
Now, look, Dr. Eitan, it's only a job.
I've read your paper. You've been writing this observatory for 2 months now. You've attacked me personally. I have nothing to say to you.
Well, this is your chance to get your side into the paper. Look, Dr. Eitan, I'll give it to you straight. 2 months ago, the observatory issued a press statement that the world was coming to an end. Now, that's the same story the cult of the Book of Revelations had been preaching. Now, when a scientist backs that up, it's news.
Our conclusions have nothing to do with the cult. The cult is full of superstition and mysticism. We're scientists.
You've got the people pretty angry.
It doesn't matter.
If I can't get the story from you, I'll have to go somewhere else.
Go ahead.
The paper can be pretty rough on someone who doesn't cooperate, Dr. Eitan.
Young man, if you're not out of the observatory within 5 minutes, I shall call the police. Now, get out.
The reporter walks down the long hall from the observatory. The light filters through the high, clear-story windows, the yellow light of Gamma, the brightest of the 6 suns in the planet's sky. Beta is almost at zenith. Its red light floods the landscape to an unusual orange. The planet's sun, Alpha, is at the antipodes. And now, as Gamma sinks below the horizon, the red dwarf sun, Beta, is alone, grimly alone. It's a short drive from the observatory to Saro City, and the red light glares from the highway. The temple of the cult stands hewn from the solid rock of the Dormite Mountains outside the city. And in the inner courtyard stands Sor, the priest of the cult.
Woe to the unbelievers! Their souls will rot with the absence of light.
Tell me, Your Reverence, what will happen? What are you waiting for here?
The day of the coming. It is written in the book of Revelations. It came to pass the sun Beta was alone in the sky, and the world was shrunken and cold. And men did assemble in the public squares and highways. Their minds were troubled, and their speech confused. For the souls of men awaited the coming of the stars. And the lip of the cave of darkness passed the edge of Beta, and loud were the cries of men, and there was no light on the surface of the world. And in this blackness, there appeared the stars in countless numbers. And in that moment, the souls of men departed from them, and their abandoned bodies became even as beasts. From the stars then reached down the heavens flame, and where it touched, the cities of the world flamed to destruction, so that of man and all the works of man not remained. So it is written.
Dr. Sharon, you're the only scientist I could find in the city. Where is everybody?
In the hideout.
The hideout?
Yes, but the place bored me. I wanted to be out here where things are getting hot. I want to see the stars the cultists are talking about. Besides, they don't want me at the hideout. I'm too scrawny to survive.
What is the hideout?
Well, we professors have managed to convince a few people that our prophecy of doom is valid. We've got about 3,000 people. They're supposed to hide where the darkness and the stars can't get at them. We hope they'll survive and leave the records.
Survive? Survive what?
Well, how true it is, I can't say. But the cultists say that every 2,050 years, all the suns disappear. And there is a total darkness, and then they say things called stars appear. Of course, men go mad. They mix all this up with a lot of religio-mystic notions. But that's the central idea.
But that's impossible, isn't it? I mean, there are always at least two suns in the sky, most of the time four or five.
There aren't now. Only Beta.
You mean that there is going to be worldwide darkness tomorrow, that all mankind will go violently insane? What's behind that?
Well, for one thing, the history of civilization of the world. We have located a series of cycles of civilizations comparable to our own, all of which, without exception, were destroyed by fire at the very height of their culture.
But is there any scientific theory behind this which would explain it?
Well, the University Observatory finished their calculations 2 months ago. And tomorrow there will be an eclipse of Beta, so that the planet will become dark. That eclipse comes every 2,049 years. Darkness. And maybe those mysterious stars that no man has seen. And then madness and the end of civilization.
And you expect to live through this at the hideout?
They plan to photograph the eclipse and leave the records. And then the rest of mankind will know what to expect.
Well, what is there in darkness to drive men mad?
Have you ever experienced darkness, young man?
Well, no, but I know what it is. It's just no light.
Oh. Draw the curtain.
Why, what for? If we had four or five suns out there, we might want to cut the light down for comfort, but with only Beta...
Ah, that's the point. Just draw the curtain and then come here and sit down.
All right. I can't see you.
Feel your way.
But I can't see you. I can't see anything.
Do you like it?
Oh, it's awful. The walls seem to be closing in on me. I keep wanting to push them away.
All right, all right. Draw the curtain back again.
Oh, the light, the light. Do you have a drink?
Right here. Now, that was just a dark room.
Yes, but it wasn't really so bad.
You're afraid?
Just darkness could do that?
This isn't just a metaphysical theory, young man. It's promulgated from observed data. Well, come with me.
Where?
The locked wall down the corridor. Were you at the Cerro City Centennial Exposition 2 years ago?
I was overseas on assignment.
Well, you remember hearing about the tunnel of mystery that broke all records in the amusement area?
Oh, yes. Wasn't there some fuss about that? The Anti-Vice Society had it shut down?
Oh, it was shut down, all right. But the Blue Noses had nothing to do with it. That tunnel was nothing but a mile-long passage through darkness. You rode in a little car, and it took 15 minutes to get through. Oh, it was very popular while it lasted.
Popular?
Well, there's a fascination to be frightened when it's part of a game. Absence of light is one of the instinctive human fears. People came out of that 15 minutes of darkness shaking and half dead with fear.
Well, weren't there some deaths?
Oh, bad hearts, but that wasn't the big danger. Now, which key is this? Ah.
Where are we going?
You'll see. No, the heart attacks were actually good for business, but there was something else. Here, I'll show you. I want you to see somebody. Latimer.
Go away.
Latimer, I want you to meet somebody. This is Mr. Theremin.
No, go away.
Hello?
He's pushing me. Make him stop pushing me. Go away.
I'm not touching him. What's wrong?
Latimer is afraid, aren't you?
The walls. They're falling in on me. The walls. I've got to get out. Let me out.
You can't go out, Latimer. It's all right.
I've got to get out. Let me out.
At sleeping period, we have to give him a shot of morphine. Otherwise, he'd bat his brains against the wall.
What's wrong with him?
Nothing. Nothing but 15 minutes in the darkness of the tunnel of mystery.
Oh, that's impossible.
One person out of 10 came out of the tunnel that way. That's why we had it shut down.
But why should darkness do that?
It's obvious men cannot exist without light. Longer periods of darkness would obviously be fatal. The scientific theory is that the consciousness of light is necessary for mental activity.
Please, doctor, let me outside. Let me out, please. I can't breathe. They're pushing me. They're always pushing me. I can't stand here.
Well, there you are, Theremin. That's what 15 minutes of darkness will do. Man just wasn't built to operate without light. There are always at least 2 suns in the sky, most of the time more.
Just 15 minutes of darkness.
Now, look out of that window. Imagine darkness everywhere. No light as far as you can see. Black. Everything black. And stars, whatever they are. Can you conceive it? No. Your mind wasn't built for that conception. When the real thing comes, you will go mad. Completely and permanently. There is no question of it. Tomorrow, there won't be a city left standing in the world.
Why should the cities be destroyed?
If you were in darkness, what would you want more than anything else? What would it be that every instinct would call for? Light. And how would you get light?
I don't know.
You'd burn something. They've got to have light. They've got to burn something. And every city in the world will go up in flames. Well, shall we go back to my office, Mr. Theremin, and have another drink?
Through the skies, the red sun Beta shines alone. The wind howls across the city. It is cold. Colder than man can remember. And as the hour approaches, the reporter goes out and speaks to the man in the street.
Excuse me, where are you going now?
Home for supper.
How about, what are you going to do tonight?
Oh, you mean about this star stuff? Look, I'll tell you, mister, I got nothing against religion, see? But it don't stand to reason that the end of the world is going to come boom like that. It just don't stand to reason.
Have you read what the scientists say?
I don't read stuff like that, only the headlines.
Well, how about the cult?
Well, now, like I say, I've got nothing against religion.
But you don't believe them either.
They've always been shouting about doom and sin. Listen, when you've been around as long as I have, you get to know the score. It's all right to preach Judgment Day is coming and all that, but just the same, I'm putting money in the bank.
How about darkness?
About what?
How would you feel if there were no light?
You crazy. How could there be no light?
Well, suppose all the suns went down at once. Suppose everything was black.
That's crazy. What's the use of supposing something like that? It couldn't happen. It's crazy.
That's all. Thank you.
Sure, sure. Oh, look, mister, remember, palette with two L's?
All this talk of scientific explanation, it's sinful, that's what it is.
Are you a member of the cult, sir?
Sure I am. Been a member since I was a boy. My daddy was a member, too. I've seen the books, it's all written down in the books.
Don't you believe the scientist's explanation?
Don't need it. I'm going to save my immortal soul. I'm going to stay on the mountaintop in a white robe while the stars carry me away to glory. Blessed be the stars. Amen.
What are the stars?
The glory, the breath of the heavens, the spirit of the ultimate. That's what they are.
The observatory has announced that it intends to take pictures of the stars.
Blasphemy. I sold my house, I gave all my money to the poor. Won't need it anymore. I'm going to heaven with the stars. Glory, glory, going with the stars.
The reporter checks the stock exchange, the stores, business at a standstill. Doesn't pay to buy anything today, not if the world is going to end tomorrow. There are predictions of economic collapse in the financial section, layoffs at the factories on the edge of the city. And through the streets, the people will mill and turn, unsure, crying in fear or shouting with bravado. The story isn't here in the city. And so as the hour approaches, the reporter goes again to the observatory, high in the hills.
Look, Dr. Eitan, if you are right, if the world is going to be destroyed, what is the difference if I stay here and observe and take notes?
Nothing, I suppose. You will be in the way. We have work to do.
If I stay out of the way.
Hello, hello. Oh, this place is like a morgue. It's freezing outside. The wind is enough to hang icicles on your nose. Beta doesn't seem to give any heat at all, the distance it is.
Why aren't you in the hideout, Sharon?
Me? I'm part of the race that isn't worth perpetuating. Who's got a bottle?
There'll be no alcohol today. It'd be too easy to get my men drunk. I can't afford to tempt them. All right, Thurman, you can stay. Time we took our positions. The observatory dome is up these stairs.
After you.
Ah! What is that?
Up in the dome, quick!
What is it?
It's the plates. The photographic plates, they're all smashed.
There he is. A cultist.
He's going for the telescope. After him.
All right, I've got him.
Let go.
No.
Let go must be destroyed. It must be.
It's all right. He didn't harm anything. Let him up.
Well, that's the high priest. I was talking to him yesterday.
All right. What do you want?
Nothing that you would give me of your own free will.
I made a bargain with the cult to give me certain data that you had. In return, I promised to prove the essential truth of the creed.
There was no need to prove that. It stands proven by the Book of Revelations.
I offered scientific backing for you believers.
You made of the darkness and the stars a natural phenomenon and removed all its real significance. That was blasphemy.
The facts exist.
Your facts are a fraud and a delusion.
How do you know?
I know.
I suppose you think in trying to warn the world against the menace of madness, we are placing souls in jeopardy, huh? Well, we haven't succeeded, if that makes you feel better.
Your devilish instruments must be destroyed. We obey the will of the stars.
Someone call the police in Cerro City.
There's no time for that. Let me handle this. The eclipse is only a few minutes away. Look, you. Will you give your word of honor to cause no trouble?
I will not.
Listen.
Just as soon as the eclipse starts, we're going to take you and put you in a closet with the door closed, and you will stay there. Then you won't see the darkness, and you won't see the stars. And that means the loss of your immortal soul, according to the cult. All right. Will you give your word of honor?
You have it. You will all be damned for your deeds of today.
Look at Beta.
The eclipse has started. You can see the blackness against Beta. Get busy on those cameras. Check the exposures very carefully.
You're shaking, Mr. Fetterman.
Yes, I don't feel very well.
You're not losing your nerve.
No, I'm just not used to it.
You could probably make the hideout.
I have been assigned to cover a story. I intend to cover it.
Oh, professional honor?
Yes.
Yes. Alas, Ophanet Radrock. Alas, Ophanet.
What is that?
Bibla Ludlock.
The cultist. That's the Book of Revelations.
I don't understand it.
He is chanting some old cycle language. The Book of Revelations was originally written in it. There are probably 2 million people in Sarah City who are trying to join the cult. One gigantic revival.
How do the cultists manage to keep the Book of Revelations going from cycle to cycle if everyone goes mad? Who wrote the book?
There are some people who don't see the stars. The blind, those who drink themselves into a stupor, and children, to whom the world as a whole is too new and too strange for them to be frightened at stars and darkness. They would have memories, and that, combined with the confused, incoherent babbling of the mad, formed the basis for the Book of Revelations. Oh, the cult will be riding high down there in the city. I hope they make the most of it.
Dr. Sharon, I just heard from the hideout on the private line.
Oh, they're in trouble?
They are safe, but the city is... the shambles. You have no idea.
Well, it'll get worse. What are you shaking about, Dr. Ayton? How do you feel?
You don't understand. The cultists are rousing the people to storm the observatory, promising them immediate entrance into grace, promising them salvation, promising them anything.
How long till the total eclipse?
An hour.
Well, it's a gamble. It will take time to get a mob out here. If the darkness comes first, we're all right.
Oh, look at Beta. It's cut in half. Half of it is black.
Yes, it's getting darker. An interesting phenomenon. Oh, my collar is suddenly tight. Are you having any difficulty in breathing?
No, why?
Difficulty in breathing is one of the first symptoms. We have experimented.
I'm cold. Seems to be getting colder.
Yes, well, we'd better keep our minds on something else. One of the astronomers has a theory about the stars. Far away to see in the light. He developed a fantasy about a planet revolving around one sun. It's a mathematical possibility. Of course, there couldn't be any life. Part of the planet would always be dark and without light. Well, it's obvious. Without light, there can't be any life.
It's time for the artificial light. We can't read the instruments.
Artificial light?
One of the researchers at the university worked it out.
Why, it's beautiful. Yellow light. After 4 hours of red. It's beautiful. Light. Light.
The dome is quiet. The priest in his yellow robe sways slowly as his lips move in the ancient tongue. Over and over, he whispers the invocation to the stars. The technicians hunch over the instruments, and the sky gradually turns a horrible deep purple red, and the air grows denser. Dusk, like a palpable entity, enters the room, and the dancing circle of yellow light about the torches etches itself into ever sharper distinction against the ever-gathering grayness beyond. Outside, Beta is a mere smoldering splendor, taking a last look at the world. The western horizon, in the direction of the city, is lost in darkness, and along the highway to the observatory surges a menacing, shadowy mass.
The mob from the city, they're coming.
How long till total eclipse?
15 minutes. They'll be here in five.
We'll hold them off. Come on, Fetterman, downstairs.
But there's no light down there.
We have to block the door. Come on.
I can't breathe. I can't go down there.
Take a torch. We'll take light with us. Come on. Ayton. Ayton.
I'm here. Did you bar the door?
They won't get in.
All right now, everybody. 1 minute till totality. 1 minute. Just before totality, I'm changing the plate. That will leave one of you for each camera. You know all about times of exposure. Now remember, don't try to look for good shots. And if you feel yourself going, get away from the camera.
It's dark. It's getting dark.
Sharon. Sharon, where are you? I can't see you, Sharon.
I'm right here.
30 seconds.
Look out, the priest.
I can't see him.
And the wicked shall perish in the souls of the true believers, shall be transported in glory to the stars.
You can see him against the torch.
Don't let him get to the telescope.
From the stars that reach down a heavenly flame, and where it touched the cities of the world, flame to utter destruction.
Grab him!
You shall not blaspheme! The world must be destroyed by the stars! It must be! Let me go!
I'll take care of him.
The stars! The stars!
Five seconds to totality. Four, three, two, one.
The sky is black, and through it shine the stars. 30,000 minute suns shine down in a soul-searing splendor. It is more frightening in its awful indifference than the bitter wind that shivers across the horrible, cold, bleak world.
The stars. The stars. The stars.
Oh, no!
It's dark. 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 The walls. The walls are coming in on me. They're coming in. Light. Light. Light.
Darkness. Forever.
Light.
And ever. And ever.
Light.
And the walls
light.
Are breaking in.
We did light. Not know. We did not know.
Light.
We did not know.
On the horizon in the direction of the city, a crimson glow begins growing. 1,000 fires strengthen in brightness that is not the glow of the sun. 1,000,000 fires, as a world mad in the darkness screams in terror for the light. The night has come again.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Nightfall by Isaac Asimov, adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Wendell Holmes, John Larkin, Santos Ortega, Mercer McLeod, Alan Collins, Bob Hastings, and Roy Fant. Your narrator was Floyd Mack. Fred Collins speaking. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. We'll be right back.
You have been listening to Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back next week. We're planning on very soon having a special or a two-part program that will feature an interview I did with Frank Herbert, author of Dune. At any rate, have a good morning. Stay tuned for Any Saturday with David Rothenberg. And do not forget to call area code 212-209-2950 and support this radio station. Good morning.
You're tuned to 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York. Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund came to you on recording over listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Coming up is Any Saturday with David Rothenberg at 8 o'clock. Please stay tuned.
33 cents a day. Not much, is it? Loose change. A third of a cup of coffee. It's nothing. But did you know that 33 cents a day can help WBAI stay on the air? That's all it takes. As little as 33 cents a day. $10 a month. You can be a BAI buddy. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI using either a credit card, debit card, or by electronic fund transfer from your bank account. It's safe, secure, and easy, and it helps keep our unique, alternative, and diverse programming on the air. You'll get a WBAI membership card and other goodies. Sign up online. Go to WBAI.org and click on donate. All the details are right there. The WBAI buddy. Be one today.
This is WBAI New York. The election for the local station board is currently underway with 27 listener candidates.
My name's Phil DiPaolo. I love WBAI. I've been listening to it since I was a teenager. Over the years, I've been a guest on numerous shows that have given me a platform that no one else has offered. I believe this is a watershed moment for the future of the station. With an infusion of new ideas and voices, we can create a station that can grow and become profitable. We can be the station that plays music that no one else is playing but packs the New York City clubs. We can actually make a difference in people's lives.
My name is Jim Dingman. The whole audience for the stations in general, and we're part of a system, the Pacifica Radio System, has declined by about 75% in the past 20 years. So we have to change that. We have to alter that, and that's what I'm dedicated to do. So I want to thank you, and I want to urge all to vote for the Indy Caucus in the voting, including myself. Thank you.
I'm Eleanor Elizabeth Foreman. I'm firmly against the Visigoths, who seized the station for a month last October. I'm against the public service operating agreement with Manhattan Neighborhood Network. We can cooperate with them without giving away our independence and our ability to program. I am against a frequency swap, and I would like to reduce or eliminate infomercials for dubious products during fundraising.
My name is Ben, and I believe at the moment the station management is working tremendously hard to host high-quality programming, and the result is a pretty high-quality, diverse lineup of shows on global affairs, science, and civics. What we lack is listener members, as seen through the membership numbers, the lack of funds, and general apathy towards making WBAI a true community presence. I don't think it's a matter of technology, as we're a radio station, but a matter of keeping the promise that we represent the entire population of the tri-state region. And as a station board member, I'm going to work to ensure that LSB committees are working to address issues presented from station management and producers regarding any issues affecting their ability to produce programs on thought-provoking topics.
Hi, my name is Bruce Greif, longtime listener, supporter. WBAI is truly some of the best radio in New York City that nobody knows about. I'm amazed at the programming. I have to stop listening to get any work done. The listenership is low and graying out. It's not just over the air. Today it's phones, YouTube, Alexa. Put the community back in. These are your new members. Young people, young people, young people. Our issues are fixable if we can stop arguing and all start rowing in the same direction. Or mostly, hey, I'm a realist.
To learn more about WBAI's local station board candidates and to vote in this election, visit elections.pacifica.org. All ballots are due on Friday, October 15th. Make your voice heard.
I can't keep quiet.
What's happening in Texas is not only a local issue or a women's issue, it's a step against democracy.
When you heard about the vigilante, bounty-hunting, fascist abortion ban in Texas, and then learned that the Supreme Court is hearing a case that could overturn abortion protections nationally on December 1st, did you feel like this, listener?
We need to take to the streets. We need to shut this country down.
That's exactly why people are taking to the streets this Saturday, October 2nd, 11 a.m. at Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C., and 2 p.m. at Foley Square in New York City. And here on WBAI and WPFW, we'll be bringing you the sounds of these streets live from noon to 2. Fetuses are not babies. Abortion is not murder. And women are not incubators.
You're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM. My name is Bill Samuels, founder of NYPeoplesConvention.org. WBAI is New York's leader in progressive talk. Whether the issue is prison reform, education reform, the legalization of marijuana, or women's rights, the people's issues are covered on these airways. So stay tuned for the best in leading-edge progressive ideas and analysis. And remember to support independent media financially.
You've got to start off each day with a song. Now even when things go wrong, you feel better, you even look better. I'm here to tell you that you'll be a go-getter. Now the way that you shake my hand will tell me how I stand. Now isn't it better to go through life with a smile and a song than walking around with a face 11 miles long? Now you know that you can't go wrong. If you start off each day with a song, you've got to start off each day with a song.
Oh, sing it, Jimmy boy.
Even when things go wrong,
sing it for the hoi polloi.
You feel better, you even look better. Ah, that music, it does something to me. I wish I knew what it was. Last night I was telling Umbriago about my latest concerto called Tony's Pushcart. He said, Tony's Pushcart, how does it go? I said, it doesn't go, you have to push it. I got a million of them, a million of them. Now you know that you can't go wrong.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
If you start off each day with a song, you've got to start off each day. Boys, please, soft, soft, a little more fortissimo. I want to relate a yarn. Turn back the pages of history and what do you see? Madison Square Garden or Odeo. And there I was, interviewing a prize-winning cow. I asked her to tell the radio public how she feels. She said, moo. She's contented. I'm contented, but her husband ain't. So what happens? The bull ups to me. I ups to him, and without any preliminaries, I'm flat on my back. Being a gentleman, I apologized. But the bull's not satisfied. He demands an autopsy. So I grabs him by the tail, and what happens? He flips his tail. I lands on his head. He flips his head. I lands on his tail. He's playing ping pong with me, and I'm losing. Just then, the bull is ready to charge again. I gets an idea. I start singing, south to the border, down Mexico way. And what happens? The bull starts crying. But irregardless, I keeps on singing. This time with the castanets. That's too much for the bull. He collapses. A cheer goes up. I'm saved. And the moral is, you gotta start off each day with a song. You've gotta start off each day with a song.
Oh boy, you're singing now. even when things go wrong.
Oh, Jimmy, you're a wow.
You feel better. You know, I'm walking down Broadway and who taps me on the shoulder? My pal, hit him in the head, Schwartz. I said, who are you working for now? And he said, the same bunch, the wife and their kids. Now, isn't it better to go through life with a smile and a song than walking around with a face 11 miles long? Now you know that, so you can't go wrong.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You start off each day with a song.
Thank you, Jimmy. I guess it's all a matter of perspective. I don't want to shut the country down. I want to open it up. But people protest and rally in different ways. I'm David Rothenberg. The program is Any Saturday on listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. It is the 2nd of October, one of my two favorite months, October and May. I opened the windows and got under the blanket at night. And that's the way I like it. I could feel the fresh air on my face and the warmth on my body. Well, let's start things off with two of my pet peeves that I've been kvetching about forever. And they've come together and it's almost the perfect storm. One is the bikes and the motor scooters and the skateboards. I've become the cranky old man, but I'm also have been hit twice by bikes. I've been thrown back a half a dozen times because they don't stop at lights when the traffic is heavy. Many do not use the bike lanes. They go the wrong way. They're on the sidewalk. They speed around corners against the light. And I'm vigilant about it, watching, and I still get surprised because they come out from between cars. My second great concern has been people walking down the street, up and down stairs at the subway, reading their smartphones. And what I've been watching is, and what concerns me, and this is an issue for the current mayor and the next mayor, is the number of people who are crossing the streets, again, with the lights, with their reading their dumb phones, with their ears plugged in, listening to whatever inanities are coming across. And they're not watching and they're not listening. And the bikes and the motor scooters are speeding around. And we are going to have a crisis of injuries if there isn't some law and order for the traffic. I think one of the things, start giving tickets to the motorbikes that don't stop at red lights and go through, or the bikes that cut off cars that are making turns and they're going against the light. There has to be some imposition by the government to protect the lives of the many. The few have to be held accountable, not punished, held accountable. And the word will get out quickly that there's some law and order about our traffic. Digest that and protest. Here's Rosemary Clooney with a Sondheim song. This is how I feel about y'all.
And say, isn't Rosemary Clooney on the program tonight?
Certainly.
Well, where is she? Come up with it.
Easy now. Remember your dizzy spells.
Don't be such a hoarder. Bring Rosemary on.
Okay. Rosemary.
Yes, Bing?
Look what just crawled in, Rosemary.
Hi, Rosie.
Hello, you wonderful man.
Oh, this girl knows.
Hey, old friend, are you okay? Old friend, what do you say? Old friend, are we or are we unique? Time goes by, everything else keeps changing. You and I, we get continued next week. Most friends fade, or they don't make the grade. New ones are quickly made, and in a pinch, sure they'll do
discuss. Old friend, here's to us. Who's like us? Damn few. Hey, old friends, how do we stay? Old friends, no one can say. Old friends, how an old friendship survives. One day, chums, having a laugh, a minute. One day comes, and they're a part of your lives. New friends pour through the revolving door. Maybe there's one that's more. If you find one, that'll do. But two old friends, especially you old friends, here's to us, who's like us.
You were making in the kitchen last night.
Oh, I was having more fun.
What were you doing?
I was running a stack of your records to the garbage disposal. Why don't you breeze, Busty? You're not needed here. It only takes two to tango, you know. Go, boy.
Ready, Rosie?
I'm with you, Rod.
We're gone.
Obviously, from a radio soundtrack, Hope and Crosby, Stephen Sondheim's song, and this arrangement and band conducting by John Otto, O-D-D-O, John Otto. I'm trying to get to a sense of normalcy, and it, for me, that means going to the Y to swim, going to the movies, returning to the theater, having dinner.